Good morning. Welcome to Black Book Talk, July edition. Today, we are very fortunate to have as our guest, Renee Sims. I'm here with O.B. Hill.
Hello. How's it going?
And I'm Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning. How are you?
I am great. How about you?
I'm really good. It's a sunny day in Washington, and it's summertime.
I love summertime. I am so pleased to have you on the show this morning. You have a new book called Meet Behind Mars, and I have it here in front of me, and we're going to talk about it.
Great.
So I understand you're an assistant professor there at Puget Sound?
Yes, I actually got promoted recently, so now I'm an associate professor, but I teach in African American Studies. That's my home program, but I also contribute to the English department, so I'm teaching courses in Black literature. I have a course that's Black fiction and feminism, and I teach first-year seminars about Black film and how to understand and analyze the way that Blackness is portrayed in film. African-American studies and English.
Well, sounds wonderful. So your book, Meet Behind Mars, when I first saw the book, I thought, Behind Mars, I thought sci-fi. But it's not.
No, it isn't. And I've had a lot of people say that. It's a lyric from Cheryl Lynn's song Star Love. And it wasn't meant to communicate that it's a science fiction book, but to communicate something about the universe and being present in the universe and being free or feeling free enough to go wherever you want to go.
Well, yes.
Prior to writing this book, have you produced any other books?
No, this is my debut collection, and I'm working on a novel now that I hope to. I have a draft that's completed, but I hope to finish and do revisions by 2019. But this is my first book. I just published individual stories that are in this collection. In journals separately, and I've published essays that way as well.
I saw that it was a collection of stories. So how long did it take you to put together a collection like this?
Wow, that's a great question. I started probably late 1990s just writing individual stories with my head down and being in each world of each individual story and thinking about those characters and their motivations and not really thinking about them as a collection until around 2014, 2015. I started to look at all the stories that I'd produced and trying to find a theme that connected them. And what I decided for the stories that are in Meet Behind Mars is that each story deals with the theme of displacement. The characters, whether they feel displaced because they've had to move to a new city, a new state due to a hurricane in their home state, or whether their neighborhood is being bused to a new school during school desegregation in the 1970s. So displacement was what, to me, made the stories cohere, but I didn't think about them as one unit until several years after I'd written and published them individually.
So the idea of displacement, did that come through like snippets of conversations or people you knew who were displaced that got you thinking about it? How did that theme come about?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know that I can answer that directly other than to say that I lived in several places during the course of my life. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. And lived there until I was 28, 29, and then moved to the West Coast. I was in Southern California, and then Phoenix, Arizona, and then I moved to Washington in 2011. So I'm someone who has lived in different places. I'm also an adoptee before there were open adoptions, right? So I'm also someone who experiences a feeling of alienation and displacement because I don't know my biological family and roots. So I would say it's something that comes naturally to me as a theme and a subject matter of interest. And also, as you know, being African American, displacement, migration, alienation are things that we have dealt with historically, and that is so much a part of our literature that I think that's also why I was drawn to it.
Now, how many stories or short stories do you have in this particular book?
This book just has 11 stories of varying length, but yeah, there were lots of stories that I did not include because I didn't feel like they were the right fit for this collection. But yeah, just 11 in Meet the Hind Mars.
Okay, of the 11, are they dealing with a special age group? You talked about displacement. What age are you pointing to in terms of the development of these essays and short stories?
The characters range in age. I think the youngest characters are like middle school. So the story that I mentioned, it's titled The Art of Heroin Worship, the story about school desegregation and busing. Those characters are young. But I would say the majority of the stories deal with adult themes and adult characters who are anywhere from their, you know, 20s through 50s, 60s. So I'm talking about grown folks primarily.
Do you have any favorite characters among the characters in the book?
Oh, I would have to say that Hattie, who is the main character in the first story, High Country, is one of my favorites. And also the character in the last story, the title story, Meet the Hind Mars. Those two characters resonate with me. Hattie is someone who is trying to finish a novel. She's a writer. She's also a mother. She has three young kids, and she's trying to do that balancing act. So kind of the displacement that I'm dealing with in that story has to do not so much with outside forces like busing affecting her, but because she's trying to deal with being a contemporary working woman and being an artist, but also having these obligations to home and people looking at her because she's a Black writer, dealing with all of those things. So I really relate to that character. And then the character in the last story is also a mother, but she's a single mother, and she's dealing with kind of microaggressions and everyday racism from her community in this fictional town in Washington, and she's trying to push back against it. So I also relate to her. They're very different characters. I feel like is trying to figure out how to adapt to her surroundings and how to make her mark in the world. And Gloria in the last story is pushing back and is saying, wait a minute, this is how you're going to treat me. And so they're very different characters, but I like both of them very much.
Can you say a little bit more about how you chose that title, Meet Behind Mars?
Yeah, I didn't have a title for the manuscript for a long time, but then when I wrote that story and the title kind of came as I was writing it, as I was listening to the voice of this character, Gloria, speak, and it's an epistolary story, so she's writing letters to a school board trying to talk about the way that they've treated the school community has treated her and her son. And as she's writing these letters, that song title, Meet Behind Mars, just came up. And the way that she explains it is that she says that when she was a teenager, she and her sister used to listen to that song, and they loved it. And her sister probably heard that lyric of meeting behind Mars to kiss someone as, you know, being a romance story. But when she heard a story of going any place in the world that she wanted to go and to expect good things when she showed up. And once I wrote that, that seemed to be a way to communicate the ideas in stories about displacement and community and feeling like you're in a hostile environment and trying to find community and build community in that situation. It seemed like the perfect way to communicate that idea. And the other thing was that the title also went with the cover art that I wanted for the book, which is by the poet and visual artist Krista Franklin. And the piece is called Kool-Aid Space, and Krista made it in 2010. And look at it, there's like a figure that looks like an octopus, there's an airplane, there's Sora, there's a mother and daughter who look very retro, there's a picture of Kool-Aid, and you don't know where you are, you're just disoriented. So Meet Behind Mars seemed to be the perfect title also to go with that image, subject matter of the stories.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO, and our special guest is Renee Sims. Her new book, Leap Behind Mars. Now, did this book, is it self-published, or how did you go about getting finding a publisher, if not?
No, self-published. It's published by Wayne State University Press, and it's part of their Made in Michigan writer series. So Wayne State University is in Detroit, Michigan. I attended law school there, and they have a press. They do academic work and also creative writing, fiction and poetry. And they have a series where they try to find work by people who have a connection to the state of Michigan. Either you grew up there or you've lived there for a long period of time. And so that's who published the book. The way it came to take the manuscript there is that I had a friend, Desiree Cooper, who published her story collection, Know the Mother, with Wayne State University Press a couple years before mine. And she knew that they were looking for manuscripts, and she gave the acquiring editor my manuscript, and that began the process.
Well, that's a nice way to get published, that a friend gets your manuscript in this job. I saw in the front of the book that they have a list of the Made in Michigan writer series. So these are all the writers who are from Michigan who have written, who have submitted manuscripts and published?
On the website, I think they do list the different writers who they've published. In the front of the book, they list the advisory editors and the general editors for the Made in Michigan writer series. So that may be who you're looking at, the people who advise the selection of manuscripts for this series.
Okay. I'm wondering if you will share a passage from your book.
Sure. I'm going to read a short passage from The Body When Buoyant. And this is a story that was first published in the journal Callaloo, and it's about a caregiver who has been displaced from her home in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Before her life had become what it was, Nichelle was living with her mother. The two of them shared a walk-up in Orleans Parish. It was right after Nichelle's divorce. She and her mother were grudging roommates, her mother reminding her each day that her ex-husband ain't never been shit, that Nichelle had been the one taking care of him. "I'm taking care of you now. What's the difference?" Nichelle said. The day they moved in, she carried her mother's shoes, all 20 large boxes, up the stairs in soaring heat to their flat. On good days, there was a breeze that would catch through the screened windows and move through the rooms. Most days, it was a sweat box up there, especially when her mother turned on the oven, which she seemed to do every day. "Why can't you just cook on the stove?" Michelle asked. Her mother did many things that vexed her, like drink bourbon through the night, and she had a habit of lining objects into rows or heaping them into piles. Her junk took up much-needed space on their floor and countertops. She'd cluster spoons, jelly jars, pencils, you name it, but it was the shoes that drove Michelle crazy because there were so many of them. One night, Michelle came home to find her mother on her knees, rearranging the shoes and other clothing by color. Red shoes went with red hats in one corner and so forth. "So," Michelle said, "what you doing now?" "What it look like I'm doing? I'm organizing." Later, when the hurricane slammed water up their stairs to their walk-up, splitting the wood and making it groan, her mother's shoes would rise on top of the water like multicolored boats. Her mother's body would float on the water too, but in a way much different from her shoes. 10 years later, that buoyancy still crept into Michelle's dreams.
Now see, that was a very interesting character, because right away I wondered, why did the mother think that was organizing, and how did that come about?
Yeah, it's interesting. The mother, I think, has what we may call an OCD, like obsessive compulsive disorder. And in the story, Michelle also shows some characteristics of that disorder, and she's seeing a therapist to deal with the post-traumatic stress she has because of the hurricane and maybe some other things that are going on. So it was important to kind of show how the characteristics that Michelle has were maybe inherited or learned, really.
Tell me this, in terms of all the things that you're doing up at the University of Puget Sound, are you able to tour and promote this book in that manner?
That's a great question. I have been doing interviews. I have, written interviews that appear online. I hope to talk to Between the Covers, which is also on cable in Portland. And maybe visit Detroit, Los Angeles, Phoenix, and some other cities. But this is, again, my debut collection. It's on a tiny independent university press. Not that those are bad things. These are things that I've chosen, and I'm very proud of this book, and I'm proud of the publisher. But do I have like a big budget to go on a tour? And I'm also a mother. And like you said, I'm also teaching. So I'm trying to balance a lot of things. I have a kid who's getting ready to go to college in 4 weeks. So I'm trying to fit in promotion of this book in between all of those things. So it's an exciting and crazy time in my life.
You are busy. And it all sounds exciting.
Thank you.
So how are you adjusting to living in Puget Sound? The weather is different from what it sounds like you've been used to. Is it better for your writing?
That's a great question. I am someone, I'm a writer who is influenced by place a great deal. And I've never lived in a place where I could not write. I think I'm haunted by Michigan landscape and memories I have of that place, but also by the desert in Arizona, breathtaking and almost like a sacred spiritual place. This is more like a rainforest. Washington feels more like Michigan. It's so green. It's very dreary for some. But that's not a bad thing, right? When you have to write, because it forces you to kind of see inside. But no, I have found it to be less inspiring than other places. It's got its own rhythm and feel that I've adjusted to. It took a while for my kids, I think, because they'd always grown up in sunny states. Mm-hmm. But for me, it reminded me of Michigan, and I'm kind of moody, and the weather is moody, so it was a good fit.
Well, it appears that this moving around you're doing is almost an incorporation in your book of your actual life experience. Now, how many children do you have?
I just have two kids. I have a son and a daughter, and they're 18 and 13. So they're not little. Trying to push them all out pretty soon. And I have moved a lot, but my son was born in California, and my daughter was born in Arizona. So this is only the second state that they've lived in.
I want to go back and talk about that last story, Meet Behind Mars.
Mm-hmm.
It's written in a different form. It's written as emails, letter form. How did that come about? Because it's very effective.
Yeah, I thought that recently, and I hadn't reflected on the origins of the story, how I decided on that form.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it had to do with, and a friend, the writer here, helped me kind of come to this conclusion. Her name is Tamako Nomura. And I think that I came to that form because I was thinking about, okay, what evidence does this character have to prove all of these things that she says has happened to her, right? And some of them are going to come in the form of voicemail messages that she saved, and some of them are email messages. It has to do with evidence, I think. I was thinking, if she's going to go before the school board and prove this case of, you know, all these incidents of microaggression and racism that she's accusing them of, what does she have to prove that? So I think that was my line of thinking and how I arrived at that form for the story.
Well, as I said, very effective and very right there.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
For short stories, is there any special way that you look at them to put them in order for what's going to be the beginning, what will be the ending spot?
Yeah, so for this collection, I did think very carefully about the order, and I got great feedback from all of the editors and readers, both with the press and, you know, personal friends that I have who serve as people who give me feedback in my community. I got lots of great advice about the order. What I decided on in the end was that I wanted the first story to be about a character who is trying to figure out how to adapt to her environment, and I wanted the last story to be one of a character who has figured it out or who feels more empowered in her environment. So I was sure about the beginning and the ending. The stories that come in between, the way that I kind of put them in order had to do with the way each story ended, where it would land, the length of the story. I tried to pick up on, you know, I'd think about the last scene of the previous story and how maybe that would be a transition or could serve as a transition for the story that comes next. So that's how I thought about order for the stories that fall in between the first and the last.
Mentioning order, you said that you also have a law degree?
Yes.
Now, I know you're juggling a lot of professional emphasis here. Have you had an opportunity to practice law?
Yes, I practiced for about 4 years in Michigan. I was a litigator, so I was, you know, not writing briefs and doing research, I was in court trying cases pretty early on, right, as a young lawyer, just kind of thrown into it. And I liked it. I didn't necessarily like the type of law that I was practicing. I was doing insurance defense, so our clients were big insurance companies. And I didn't feel inspired in that way. What I did learn from the practice was how to take a whole bunch of information and concisely make a story out of it for a jury so that I could explain something in simple terms and also in a way that maybe was provocative and interesting. And then once I decided to leave the practice, that's when I started pursuing writing, and I did freelance writing for a while before I went back and got a master's in creative writing at Arizona State. But as I was freelancing and making the transition from law to writing, I worked for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund that had a Western regional office at the time in Los Angeles. And so I was able to go back as like a legal assistant and do civil rights law and feel like I was contributing to the legal community and to legal precedent in a way that felt more meaningful for me. So that was a good experience.
And gaining great skills along the way. This was great.
Yeah. And you know what? Thank you for saying that, because it hasn't felt like I had a linear, logical path, but it has all come together in a way here in Washington at this moment in a way that I could not have predicted.
I have two more questions. One is, are you coming to Portland and when?
I would love to come to Portland. So the big writers conference that I go to most years is going to be in Portland next spring in 2019. But I would love to come. I would love, yes, I love Portland. Powell's is there, which is an amazing bookstore. KBOO is there. So if I can get to Portland. And there's another bookstore that a friend mentioned, and it's escaping me now, but I believe it's owned by an African-American man. There are places in Portland I definitely would love to engage with.
Well, we look forward to seeing you in Portland. Can you say a little something about your upcoming novel before we finish?
Sure. The working title is Festival, and I'll tell you the inspiration for it was my brother, Rodney, who passed away a couple of years ago at the age of 58. When he graduated from high school, he went straight into working for General Motors, and he built cars for 40 years, so from the age of 18 until 58 when he passed away. And he told me a story of General Motors offering buyouts to like his cohort, because he was part of the workers who came in who had big benefits and made lots of money and were able to enter the middle class, even though they just had a high school degree. And around 2008, when General Motors filed for bankruptcy and had to figure out how to get some of these workers to retire early, they were offering them, you know, early retirement packages. And he said that he felt like some people who were drug addicts who worked for the company were being targeted, because they would take the big cash option and then just use it on drugs. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's true. I've been doing research as I write this novel, but I don't care whether it's true or not. It just sparked a story for me. What if it is true? And what is the question is, you know.
It sounds wonderful. Can't wait until you're finished and it's published so we can read it. And I want to thank you, Renee, so much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed talking to you.
Look forward to seeing you in Portland.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
See you
bye-bye.
Next month.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host The Class Hip-Hop Past, Present, and Future at Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, July 7th and 4 p.m. at KBOO in Portland. This class will explore hip-hop history locally and nationally, KBOO hip-hop programming, how hip-hop influences art, culture, and political consciousness, rhyme, writing, and production, and how liberation struggles have contributed to hip-hop culture. Again, that's Hip-Hop Past, Present, and Future at Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, July 7th at 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 12 o'clock, and we're going to go live to the Blues Fest down at the waterfront. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Fest
on the stations of Oregon Community Media,
KBOO Portland and translators K220HR Hood River and K282BH Philomath,
KMUN Astoria, KWSO Warm Springs at 91.9 FM and their HD1 channel,
KYAQ Siletz,
KSKQ Ashland, Oregon,